you lost a survivor and you're feeling down, David and Jessica will turn it around. They'll break down the rules and they'll show you how. You played yourself and got voted out. This is why Blank lost. And this is why Blank lost. Oh baby, this is why Blank lost.
Hello and welcome to this week's edition of Why Blank Lost. I'm David Bloomberg, and I have to tell you, even though I have picked Chris to be voted out four times in a row, I completely understand what he is going through out there because it is so exhausting to be so charming all the time on this podcast.
Yes, so charismatic.
Yes, you know, but luckily, I know it's beneficiary to me to have someone who can shoulder some of that load. So as you have already heard, joining me as always is my co-host, Jessica Lewis.
Hello, I am here and I feel for you, David. It must be such a struggle.
It is.
Struggle. I think the hashtag should just be beneficiary when Chris gets voted out.
Well, okay. Maybe he'll have more things before
that. That's true. But the beneficiary was fabulous.
And how do you spell that? I mean, everybody who was saying it on Twitter had it spelled differently.
That makes it even more funny.
Yeah. So, all right.
Very enjoyable indeed. I know this is supposed to be about James, but there were so many things that I was watching or reading about Chris, and I just kept thinking of you and how you will be reveling in it when it's time to talk about Chris.
Well, I won't be reveling in it. I would never do that.
No, you wouldn't.
Never. Speaking of, Chris and the fact that I have predicted him leaving four times, mm-hmm. You know how Jeff Probst told the Malolo tribe that they may never win another challenge?
Mm.
Well, after this fourth incorrect prediction, he called me up and he said, "You may never get a survivor prediction." Right?
It is looking pretty dreary at this point.
Yeah. But hey, at least the Magic 8-Ball was wrong, too.
It was. I had a strong showing the week Stephanie went home, and then it just petered out for me. So I'm doing terrible as well. Terrible. Since my winner pick went home on the second episode, I clearly do not know what I'm doing. Oh, Lord.
All right. Well, before we go any further, a quick reminder to any new listeners or maybe listeners with really short memories that we will be spending the rest of the podcast going through My Survivor rules to see what James did right and wrong. And you can find those rules at robhasawebsite.com/survivor rules. As we move into that part of the show, James said in his CBS interview that he was on the bottom because he was the easy sheep to pick off. He didn't have a strong enough bond with Desiree and Kellen because he didn't meet them until day 15. So the question, or one of many questions that we have to ask and answer, is, was that the reason he was voted out? Or was there more to it? It's time to figure out why James lost.
He did also say in one of his interviews that there's not one move I can blame for my own downfall. And I thought of you again when I read that, because I was sure that we're probably going to find more than one. Maybe.
Never mind. So we're going to do something a little out of the box today. We almost always start with rule one for obvious reasons. It is rule one. But occasionally we find that another rule needs to be discussed first. This time, for the first time ever, we're going all the way to Appendix A to start.
Dun, dun, dun.
Dun, yes. And that's because the key to this appendix is to keep your end goal in mind when you're voting. And I think that played a huge role in the decisions made to vote out James. Typically, players should vote out the week at this point to try to avoid going back to tribal council, especially when they're down to a tribe of only four people. In this case, there was some discussion of voting Desiree because of her weak challenge performances. James even mentioned that they had all talked about who should be the caller in the challenge beforehand. He thought Kellen should do it for obvious reasons, but Desiree insisted. So he figured, well, okay, let her do it. If she fails, she can be a target as a weak player. the problem is that all season long, we've seen players making correct decisions based on alliances and strategy rather than the simple view of whether someone can help them win challenges. And yeah, it happened against this time because sure, you know, Desiree screwed up. Yeah, James is probably stronger overall in the challenges, but it didn't matter. There were other things that came into play.
Yes, but unfortunately, I think the wrong decision was made here.
Oh,
I do. I do.
Okay. Okay. Well, let's see where we end up then, because, you know, I'm sort of leaning there also, depending on, you know, what information was out there, because on the one hand, if you're Angela and you know that Kellen and Desiree have worked as part of a super tight five, well, where does that put you later? I would say number six at best.
At best. Yeah.
So, you know, to my mind, you're better off flipping to the people with whom you've spent more time. But there were other people, including Stephen Fishback, who said it didn't make sense for her to flip because she would end up as a soldier without an army, in his words.
Which I initially thought the same thing until I really started to look at it. And this girl could have had an army. She would have had a fantastic army if she had flipped.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, the first two members of her army are James and Michael and the allies of James and Michael.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I think we need to look and see, okay, with that in mind, why didn't she go in that direction?
Oh, I don't know. It's boggling my mind.
Okay, well, I'm going to try to unboggle you.
Well, I will have to just reference Adam Klein mentioned this at the Run It Up Reno. Okay, so one of the things that he mentioned, which I thought was absolutely spot on, was that Angela is not the type of person to kind of make waves, and I think that that's a large reason why she made the decision she made. She's too scared to make moves.
I don't know. I mean, this is a woman who's been in the army. She recently, you know, got a divorce. I don't see her as being scared.
Yes, but think about this too. What is the other part of her story? Her story is how she's lost her family. She's all alone. A lot of what we hear from Angela is how dire things in her existence have been. You know, that she's no longer doing a tour and she's missing the company that she had with, you know, the soldiers. And now her daughter, I believe, went to college. There's a lot of angst, I feel like, in her life. And there, she's missing a lot of people who were important to her. And so I feel like she's struggling so hard with those personal relationships that this is not about Survivor. This is about personal relationships. And she's mushing the two together way too much.
Okay.
Yes, I said mushing.
Mushing, yes.
Mushing them together.
Well, I didn't look at it that way. I have a few other possible reasons here. And I think it's a few things. I think the most logical explanation, which is not just for her, but for why all the original Naviti have stayed tight, well, almost all, and this is something I noted on Twitter, is that Kellen and Bradley have been holding them together and preaching Naviti strong to help keep them together, which ends up benefiting themselves in the long run. Now, when I put this on Twitter, Kellen and Bradley both responded positively to me on this, with Kellen specifically noting that I get what they're doing. So, you know,
I get it too. I get it. Right. But I feel like that there was a different decision that could have been made by James in the lead up to this, because I think he could have had Angela in his back pocket. He's already formed a relationship with her. He addressed that a lot in his exit interviews about the type of relationship they were creating. And he had assured her, I will never write your name down. And I feel like that type of surety coming from someone like James, and for someone like Angela to be hearing it and to kind of toss that aside, I feel like there could have been a different way to handle the decision and who should have been voted out instead of it being Desiree.
Okay. Well, I see what you're saying, but I think we have to remember that, yeah, it might have been better for Angela to flip, but she had Kellen and Desiree in her ears telling her exactly the opposite, both of them showing how strong Naviti could stay. And, you know, Stephen Fishback gave Kellen the fishy for offering Angela a vision of a whole Naviti sticking together.
Yes. He, and know, I agree with that entirely. But the here's the problem that Angela is going to be in. When Angela was having that conversation, at least what we saw of it with Kellen, her answer to Kellen was, I'm not sure. And I think of saying something like that when it's this is a critical point in the game where you have to make a decision of whose side are you on. And her answer is, I'm not sure, which only is going to add to Kellen's concern that Angela doesn't even know what's going on in her own head, which were Kellen's words, and that there's a fear that Angela could flip. And I really do think that Angela's response to it, even though she showed her loyalty with this vote and went with Desiree and Kellen, I don't think that she is high enough on their list to actually help her along. I think she's going to be someone that they'll see as, well, we can get rid of her. We don't need her. If we've got 9 Navidi or 8 Navidi, whatever they're going to end up with, she's kind of a throwaway. She survived 3 days, but I think that's all she's going to be. I don't see this being a long-term decision for her. I see this being a short-term decision for her.
Yeah, and I don't disagree with you. I'm just trying to think, why did she make the decision she made? And for one thing, like I said, Kellen and Desiree were never breaking.
Right.
And so obviously she could see that. And if she respects Kellen, then she's not going to turn on Desiree. And Kellen herself would never break with Desiree because they had stayed together through thick and thin. And, you know, Desiree had been very open with Kellen and brought her information about people, as Kellen described in a web confessional from mm-hmm. this episode. Plus, Kellen had started to have good relationships, good conversations with Michael before this swap. And, you know, she said she had that good relationship with Angela back for those 6 days in the original tribe.
Mm-hmm.
So you have those issues. And on top of that, Michael and Desiree were also closer than we saw, because James said the two of them were napping together in the shelter all day, for example. And that's why James didn't try to throw Michael under the bus, because Michael had been with Kellen and Desiree
right.
for those 9 days. So somehow he hoped he could still throw Desiree under the bus, or that she had thrown herself under the bus by her behavior and her failure in the challenge. But that just wasn't going to happen. And I think that probably Michael flipped to save himself, because why would he throw away relationships that he'd been building just to save James, who he really wasn't that tight with? I think, well, Michael is playing the long game and hoping to get to the merge with some Navidi pals. And if Angela knew that, then she really wasn't the decision maker that we thought she was. It's possible that, you know, we're trying to analyze, why did Angela make this decision? And it's really not Angela's decision to make. It may well have been Michael's decision. And he just informed Angela, hey, just so you know, I'm with you.
And all of that makes sense. So this is what brings me to it was the wrong decision that I think all three of them made, because there's one person we keep talking about. We keep talking about Kellen. And one of the interviews that was given to John Powell, where James explained the rationale behind the Morgan vote, he actually said the rationale behind the Morgan vote was to deliver the biggest blow to them in a single vote. And if you want to deliver a blow to Navidi, go after Kellen. Like, that's what I don't understand, because I feel like James could have sold Angela on Kellen because of the issues that she had with Navidi. Angela was very clear. They slit her throat. Her own family, you know, tried to take her out. Malolo saved her. Like, that was a narrative that I think James should have really been spending time with. And as far as Michael is concerned, he needs to see that he's not necessarily playing a long-term game, because we saw in the preview, he says, I'm the next to go. So he bought himself another 3 days, because really, if you now have those four remaining, and if Angela and Desiree and Kellen are Navidi strong, well, then who's going home from that four if they end up at tribal council? It's Michael. So Michael made the wrong choice, because he's the next to go and he sees that. And then you have Angela, who I don't think is going to last much longer. And if anything, even if she makes it all the way to the end, you have to have actually like played a game and made decisions. And this could have been a huge move for all of them because they would have taken one of the main people out of Navidi and then said, hey, Navidi, how about that Navidi strong now? You know, we just took Helen out.
I agree with what you're saying. I just don't think it ever would have happened. I don't think Michael would have turned on her after spending all that time trying to get in with her. I don't know that Angela is ever turning on her because I think that, you know, Kellen was a leader and maybe a soft-spoken leader, but a leader nonetheless. And I just don't think anyone was looking at Kellen.
I know, and they should have.
Well, I just don't think it ever really came into play. Is the problem.
No, it's just one of those things that the more I looked at this and the more I kind of delved into it, obviously I don't know what any of them were thinking at the time, but this is, I think that James explained it very well when he was talking about sprint versus a marathon when it comes to Survivor. And yes, it is true that every tribal council or between every tribal council is a sprint and you have to get there. But Survivor is also a marathon and you have to get to the end. And there's so many things that you have to think about when you're making these decisions. And sometimes you have to make a decision at the beginning for that long-term game because getting to the next vote might not be enough. And I think that's going to be Michael's issue going to the next vote if they go to tribal council. And Angela, I don't think is in a very good position either because ultimately it will come down to between Angela and Michael. And if they say, well, Michael's stronger in the actual challenges, so we'll keep him over Angela. So I feel like the two of them were not necessarily thinking long-term game. And that's where I think James's analogy really makes sense because, yes, you have to get through the next 3 days, but you also have to get to the end.
So, you know, we get to the end of this appendix and really you said something already. You said that Michael knows he's next if they go back to tribal council. But from the other standpoint, the three original Navidi know the same thing. So even without turning on Kellen now, they know they're making it to the merge. And they also probably know once you get to the merge, lots of mix-ups mm-hmm. can happen. So, you know, why make this big move now and perhaps threaten your position at the merge when you can get to the merge and see what happens then? Or at least I suspect that's what both Michael and Angela were thinking.
But here's the thing, though. Michael might not even make the merge.
Right.
And that's the part that I don't understand. And Angela, I can kind of give it to her that like, yeah, okay, you were sticking with the Navidi strong, try to get to the merge. But when it comes to the merge, I don't know if she's really going to be in a good place once she gets there, because she is the low man on the totem pole as far as the ranking order, I think, when it comes to Navidi. So it's one of those situations, if you're Michael, I feel like you would want to be fighting a little bit harder because you might not make the merge because you weren't willing to turn things on their heels now. Because if you think about it like this, if they had flipped, if they had gotten rid of Kellen, if they end up at tribal council again, and it's Michael, James, Desiree, and Angela sitting there, Desiree's going home. So it's one of those situations where long-term thinking, now you've taken out two Navidi as opposed to no Navidi, and you're going into a merge maybe or maybe not. You know, so it's just one of those, it's a computation that I mean, you have to go through all the various scenarios in your head. And obviously when you're out there and you're playing, a lot of things happen. But it, to me, just was one of those, it was almost a missed opportunity, especially for Michael. I can understand Angela to a certain extent, but she was so hurt by what happened to her when they tried to vote her out. And she clearly knew that she's on the bottom as far as Desiree and Kellen are concerned. So I just feel like she had an opportunity to glom on to someone like James, who's telling her, I will never write your name down. And that could have been hugely beneficial going into a merge because now she's got...
You mean beneficiary?
Beneficiary. Yes. Beneficiary to Angela had she done that. So I realize it's a woulda, coulda, shoulda kind of thing. And we're not really getting into James as much, but I just think that I don't know. I struggled with this so much because I thought there was an opportunity to really change things up. And it was a missed opportunity, in my opinion.
Yeah, I just think that's not the way Michael is thinking. He's thinking hopefully longer term, getting in with the Navidi. And that's just all he has in mind at this point, I think.
Yeah. And James said in multiple interviews, Michael went into survival mode and it was just, I need to survive.
Right.
And I think that that's what he did. And I don't know if that was the best decision for him, but I guess we'll see. I mean, we there's still a lot of game left to play.
Right. Exactly. So, all right. And there's also a lot of rules left to get to here.
I know. Although we started with the appendix.
I know. So we will, now that we've discussed how the other players were thinking, even if we don't necessarily agree with it, I think it'll be easier to put James's actions into proper perspective. So we will now move to the first rule, which of course says to scheme and plot. Now, how do you think James did here?
Oh, he's very impressive, I think. I mean, unfortunately, we didn't get to see that much of James until episode 3, as far as scheming and plotting is concerned. But he came out swinging and he just did a fantastic job of reading the situation and the people that he was playing with. And I just love the way that he ended up handling the situation where they ended up taking Morgan out. I have a lot of good things to say about him in this regard, except the fact that he didn't try to get Kellen out. that's my big complaint, I guess.
Yeah, I agree. You know, looking back at some of the earlier days, he was obviously on the right side of the numbers, even when he had literally choked and screwed up a challenge performance.
Yeah.
And, you know, after the swap, the first swap, obviously, he immediately figured out Dominic's plan to show a fake idol when he actually had a real idol. And then help lead his allies to target someone other than Dominic, going instead for the person who was less likely to have an idol. And in addition, he has confirmed in interviews that a big part of the reason he pushed to cut Morgan was to sever the bond that Libby was building with her, which you and I had surmised back when we were talking about why Morgan lost.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know,
I also love that he didn't push Angela and try to get Angela to flip, that Angela thought everyone was voting for Libby and he left it alone. And I thought that was such a fantastic way to handle that situation because he didn't need Angela to flip and he could have potentially just been showing their hand if Angela had gone back and said anything to anyone. But he looked at the numbers, knew that her vote was almost like a throwaway, and he could utilize that later, really, because it's going to make Libby feel like people were gunning for her. So it's going to help him with his relationship with Libby, making her a target that he ultimately helped, and at the same time not making Angela make a decision. She just thought everyone was voting for Libby and letting her tribe show her what they really thought about her because she was getting voted for. So I think that whole play was fantastic because he really did read everything exceptionally well.
Right. I agree. And, you know, the one main thing that James has said he would do differently is to throw some challenges after they booted.
Oh,
and
that would have been so much fun.
Well, it would have. But I mean, here's the thing. Yeah. OK. You know, he thinks he and his allies controlled the tribe so they could have saved Brendan and Stephanie from getting the boot and instead gotten rid of some of the original Davidi like Chris and made my prediction come true. I mean, in retrospect, he may be right, if only because, well, it really couldn't have gone any worse for him than it ended up going.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just such a big risk, even when you are certain that you have the numbers. And as we know, Dominic really did have an idol. So
yeah.
If the Malolo decided to target him and, you know, Dominic felt it coming, it could have ended up being James or another Malolo getting the boot then. And we'd have all at the time been absolutely flabbergasted that they could have possibly thrown a challenge and been so dumb.
Yes. And that's the unfortunate thing with Survivor is that there are moves that people make. And if it works, it's amazing. If it doesn't, that was really dumb, but it could be the same exact move. It just depends on how it plays out. Yeah. You know, and that's the one thing that makes it such a great game because really it could go either way. It could really go either way.
Yeah. And so anyway, you know, once he did get to the newest swap tribe, you know, we talked about it. He was still trying to scheme and plot, but he had an uphill or up a cliff battle.
Yeah.
But, you know, he thought he had done a reasonably good job of flipping Angela to his side. And I do think he would have had a better chance if the other factors that we discussed in Appendix A weren't in play. Mm-hmm. But of course, they were. And, you know, James just found himself in a situation where he was out schemed from multiple angles.
Yeah, it really is kind of unfortunate because obviously it's people get swap screwed. And I thought it was going to be Bradley. I was wrong. but it happens. And it is unfortunate because he was in a very difficult situation because he really was, out of that five, the only one who had not really created a relationship with very many people because he had been moved around the most and not spent as much time with the individuals now on his tribe as the other people who are on his tribe had spent time together, if any of that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. And, you know, the fact that he said that he thought he had done a good job with Angela is another reason that I think it may have been Michael who made the final decision that, you know, he thought he was fine with Angela. And then Angela finds out, oh, you actually don't really have any choice in the matter.
Yeah, and that's quite possible. It is absolutely possible. But Michael, why? Tell me why. DM me. Let me know. Tell me what's going on. I'm really curious because, and that's the other thing. There's a lot that we probably didn't see. And unfortunately, that's the way editing goes. So who knows?
Yeah, yeah. So, all right, we will move along to the second rule, which discusses how players need to avoid scheming and plotting too much and backstabbing too soon. Now, I didn't see anything from James indicating that this was a problem for him. If he had thrown a challenge or two like he discussed and we just talked about, then, well, maybe we would have been discussing it then, you know, especially since he would have had to make decisions about which side they were taking, since they were, you know, he and his allies were playing both sides of the original Navidi Chris versus Dominic feud. But they never had to make that decision.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I didn't really see any issues. He actually was very good at his scheming and keeping things a secret, I think. So, yeah, I didn't see any issues here. Good job, James.
All right. So we quickly move to the third rule, which tells players they need to be flexible. And I literally just mentioned how James, Laurel, Donathan, and Libby were working both sides of the Navidi feud, which tells me that they were keeping maximum flexibility.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it would have been easy for them to pick a side and make it clear, for example, just deciding they were going to, you know, go with Dominic because they were sick of Chris. But they didn't. They kept lines of communication open so they could have choices going forward. And while that's obviously not going to help James anymore, it could be helping the others in their new swap tribes and heading into the merge.
Yes. And the other thing, too, that I thought was really indicative of his being flexible was this concept and idea that this is the first season since Samoa that there has been no theme. And so he was really hitting that hard, that this was a random shuffling of people, if you will, that there's no reason why I ended up on Malolo and there's no reason why you ended up on Navidi. That's where we were placed for this particular season. And he was trying to downplay that Navidi Malolo division, that we're just random people who ended up on these tribes and that there's nothing really holding us here, which I thought was great because I think that lends a lot of credence to his desire to be flexible.
Yeah, I agree. All right. So again, quickly moving along, the fourth rule tells players not to let their emotions control them. And since I'm pretty sure James is a robot, I don't think this was an issue for him. How about you?
Well, it is funny because that was, I think, the concern that casting had with him. That's what he said, that he was just going to be a robot and he had to work on that. But here's my stretch for this. And I don't know if it really comes into play, but you had already talked about his thoughts of losing a challenge, purposefully losing a challenge so they could go back to tribal council and take out some more Navidi. And he wasn't able to pull the trigger on that because he was playing the game like a new player. He wasn't playing the game like a returning player. And he spent some time talking about it in one of his exit interviews that he should have played like a returning player. And instead, he kind of got caught up in the, I can't not win if I have an opportunity to win, because that's what you do as as someone on Survivor, and he thought that was kind of a new player thought. And it's kind of a stretch, but I thought it might be an emotional thing for him, and that's why he made that decision. Just a thought.
Yeah, I'm going to side with the kind of a stretch portion.
I even wrote, might be a stretch. Yeah. All right. So I knew this going in that it might be a stretch.
Yeah. I mean, in all seriousness, I didn't see anything indicating James was letting emotion interfere with his logical decision making. You know, voting out Morgan was based on logic. And mm-hmm. he said that if it came to another vote, he would have talked to his allies about making the best possible choice. So even though he was getting friendly with Dominic, for example, that didn't necessarily mean Dominic was safe. If his other allies said, no, we want to target Dominic and stick with the charming Chris, then, he would have gone that way.
Right.
So I really don't think his emotions played a role, nor would they have.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Okay.
So moving to the fifth rule, which says to pretend to be nice and play the social game. Now, you just mentioned this already that, despite James being a robot and that Jeff Probst had said in casting that he didn't think James would be able to connect with other people, James, I think, showed that was simply untrue. And Jeff himself admitted that James took up the challenge and worked hard to create personal relationships. And despite Desiree saying nobody had a connection with him, James pointed out that he may have only spent 3 days with Kellen, but they shared personal moments and connected as people as well.
Mm-hmm.
He connected with Angela earlier, finally bringing her out of her shell, which was one reason he thought he had a good shot of flipping her. Because if you recall, when we did Why Morgan Lost, Morgan talked about Angela and said, she wouldn't talk about anything. Oh, you were in the service. Yeah, but I don't want to talk about it. Oh,
right.
you have a family. Yeah, but I don't want to talk about mm-hmm. it. Oh, you were divorced. Yeah, but I don't want to talk about it. So apparently she finally came out of her shell. I think he said it was like day 16 and started talking to James about those things.
Right.
Which is another reason James thought, okay, I've got a good relationship with her here.
Maybe she was playing a fantastic game and pulling the wool over his eyes. And like, I'm going to form a bond with you right now, but I'm really stabbing you in the back and sending you home.
I think that that would be amazing. And when I say that, I mean the job that the editors did to hide that would be amazing.
I know. Yeah, I doubt that's what really happened. But yes, I do think that he clearly created some very strong bonds out there. Libby and Donathan and Laurel, they were all very tight. And I know you've already mentioned it, but how they were playing both sides and forming relationships with people who were from Navidi and really keeping their options open. And that, I think, was really at his direction. I think he was playing with people like Laurel, I think, has a very good understanding of that as well. And I think that that was beneficial to him in how they
beneficiary.
I know I need to start saying it incorrectly.
Yes.
Beneficiary to he and Laurel and everyone that was playing with him up until this point, obviously.
Yeah. 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 I would close out this rule by saying if he was a robot, he had some pretty good personal interaction software.
Yes, he absolutely did.
So we move to the sixth rule, which warns players against being too much of a threat. So how do you think James fared here?
Well, this is an interesting mix because I think physically he looks like he's incredibly strong. And then we saw him in the water challenge in the second episode where he couldn't do it. And granted, that's swimming. But I think that there was some question about his physical prowess at the beginning of the episodes. I remember someone mentioning it specifically. I can't remember who, but that, we haven't really seen him do much in the challenges. If anything, he's not doing very well in the challenges. So he has, a physical presence about him, but he wasn't really bringing it to the challenges. I think as things progressed, he did better. And he only stepped up and did one puzzle with Dominic and ended up beating Bradley and Kellen. Obviously, he's incredibly smart, which everyone's heard about the squiggle. So I think it's a weird mix. I think that he was a really good, he was a threat in a lot of ways, but I don't know if we were seeing all of it this early in the game.
Yeah, I was thinking along similar lines. you know, I do think that he hid some of the ways he was a threat by not telling anyone who he really was. Mm-hmm. So he just said, I was a track coach. He didn't say, oh, I'm a business analyst and former U.S. presidential scholar from Harvard, right. You know, which I think that was a very smart move.
Absolutely.
And, you know, I do think that people probably could see that he had a chance to win individual challenges at the merge, as long as they didn't involve Biden. Mm-hmm. You know, because like you said, yeah, he did well in that puzzle challenge. And so just from that challenge standpoint, OK, he's obviously more of a threat than, say, Desiree. Mm-hmm. But he becomes even a bigger threat compared to someone like Desiree when you take into account allies that he might have in the game outside of the Navidi strong mm-hmm. people.
Yeah.
So, and plus, like I said, you know, Desiree, okay, she failed at puzzles twice, but on the flip side, she also has been following the lead of Kellen and Bradley from the strategic game. So she's kind of the perfect person to bring along.
Absolutely, yeah.
You know, from Kellen's perspective.
Well, and that's the thing that, like, it's so difficult when you're making these decisions, especially when you're getting, like, pre-merge, because like you said, when you hit the merge, lots of things happen. People go a little crazy. And sometimes those relationships don't necessarily carry over. And you also have to start thinking about individual immunity. And as far as who could potentially win, yeah, I think James is way up there as opposed to someone like Desiree. He's got a great shot at winning those individual immunity challenges because they don't involve a whole lot of swimming. They really don't. Maybe running through the water, but not too much swimming.
So, all right, moving on to the seventh rule, which talks about getting and playing idols and advantages. Now, we really didn't see anything of James searching for the idol, but he said in at least one interview that he regrets not doing it aggressively enough. He said he went looking a little bit both alone and with Michael at the new camp, but admittedly, he didn't comb through the entire camp like he should have. Now, with that said, there are two other factors I'd like to discuss here.
Ooh.
Last week I mentioned that I'll be adding advice on fake idols to the section in the future, and both of these factors involve fake idols. So previously I had discussed that throwing challenges was one of the things James said he wished he would have done. The other thing that he wishes he could have done was to grab a stick, carve a face on it, and claim it was Eliza's stick, or as the CBS interview claims he said, the funky stick. Now, I asked him, did you really call it a funky stick? And he vehemently denied it on Twitter and said he would never tarnish the proper name of Eliza's effing stick like
right.
that.
Right. That would have been so amazing to see. Oh, my word. Yes. When I read that, I was like, oh, that's genius, because it is actually a concern that people now have that they can't make fake idols because everyone knows they're idols from seasons past. And what a genius idea that would have been. Genius.
Well, I mean, I had actually been thinking about that. That would be the effing stick, not the CBS intern screw up version called the funky stick. But, you know, I did kind of wonder why nobody had tried to reproduce it.
Yeah.
Because, like you just said, it would be perfect here.
Yeah.
And yeah, you'd have to come up with a reason for not having a parchment with it, and a better reason than just saying, oh, I left it at Ghost Island.
That's true.
But, you know, you can always figure out a way around it. It blew away. It caught on fire. It was inscribed in the tree on Ghost Island, whatever. And, you know, but he said he didn't do it in part because he thought he had Angela on his side. So there was no need to stir things up.
I know. But could you imagine, even if you just show up at tribal council, because if you're there, you don't need the parchment at that point. You just pull that out and say, here's the effing stick. That would have been so sick. I would have loved it.
Well, and that is true, because, I mean, you know, Michael got away with that. He just waved a parchment around and said, well, I'm not going to go through all of this right now.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Because people are so shocked in that moment, like, oh, God. And then I think they're going to be even shocked to see that it's that particular idol, because it's so well known in the Survivor world. But obviously, who really remembers what it looked like? But we just know it was
a stick
with a face on it. It was right. That would have been such a genius move. That would have been great. Yeah.
So now on the plus side of a fake idol discussion, you know, we did talk about already how James figured out that Dominic showing them the fake idol could be a cover for having a real idol. And that, of course, led to the series of events we already discussed in the first rule that resulted in Morgan's blindside. Mm-hmm. Everything that happened there stemmed from James deducing almost exactly what Dominic was up to.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I said, great read on the people in the situation at that time. I wish he had made the effing stick. That would have been so good.
There's still hope. Someone could still
do it. I really hope somebody does. That would be incredible.
What will be almost as funny is if someone gets the effing stick and no one believes
it. I know.
Because it's just an effing stick.
Oh, my God. That would be. And do you want to know what's so funny about the stick is that it wasn't even a real idol. And perhaps its introduction to Ghost Island would be that much more fun because it could become a real idol, you know, as opposed to just an effing stick that someone made to try to trick somebody else. And it worked. Yes. Oh, my God. It was so good. Love it.
All right. So with that, we are coming to the end here for James. Before I sum up my conclusions, do you have any other final thoughts you'd like to add?
Just a few. I think that James definitely had a great shot at getting farther in this game. Unfortunately, I do think that the swap screwed him over in a lot of ways. Were there things he could have done differently? Yes. I do think that he should have targeted Kellen. I think that there were more conversations that could have been had, but we weren't out there. We don't know. He felt like he had done a good job. I think overall his game was a very solid one. He came out of it looking really great. I think overall he's grown as a person according to his various interviews that he's given. And I just want to know what a squiggle is. I really want to know what a squiggle is. I understand it's more than 150. He's a super genius. I think that's incredible. But anyway, I think that overall James's game, it was great. And I think unfortunately he left too soon. I think that there was a lot more of James that I would have liked to have seen.
Yeah. A squiggle is one lower than what my IQ test result is.
Oh, is it really now?
Yes. Yes. Just so
well, that's interesting. I never knew that about you, David.
Well,
Bloomberg.
You know, I don't like to brag. You know, I'm like Chris. I like to be charming and humble.
And charismatic.
And charismatic.
And beneficiary to others.
Yes.
That's fantastic.
Yeah. So, when it came to James, I know a lot of people want to just blame the swap for causing a loss. But the swap is almost never solely responsible, though the swap in combination with some other things can be. In this case, James found himself up against one of the strongest strategic players this season. Even though James had a relationship with both Michael and Angela, he didn't have the kind of bond that could override what Kellen could and likely did promise. Sure, Desiree screwed up the challenge. So what? Kellen certainly didn't care about that. Angela didn't care about that. Even Michael didn't seem to care about that. What all of them cared about was how they could best get to the next step in the game. Yes, Michael is likely to get the boot next week if this tribe loses again. But if they don't lose, he will have set himself up as perhaps the most integrated Malolo in the Naviti majority, having apparent relationships with Desiree, Kellen, and Bradley. Angela had a perfect opportunity to jump in and join the Malolo revolt, but either she was persuaded by Kellen to stay Naviti strong, or she found out that Michael was not part of that revolt, meaning she had nowhere to go. In the end, Kellen was still acting as leader, and she barely knew James, while she did have a relationship with everyone else on the tribe. And she's playing smart. Sometimes, even good players with a squiggle for an IQ get out-strategized, and that is why James lost.
Sorry, James. So sad.
Yes. All right. It is time for predictions.
Hate predictions.
I know. So after four times predicting that Chris would be voted out and being wrong because he hasn't gone to tribal council.
I know. It's like he's messing with you.
Yes. I cannot predict Chris this
time. Ooh, okay.
Because I do not see a way that Yanuya is losing.
That's true. That is so true.
So, you know, if you're smart, you should predict Chris because it will inevitably happen next time.
I should just to be a pain. Because then when it happens, I can be like, ha,
I know. Yeah. So in any case, I don't think Nunu Malolo will lose again either. So that leaves Nunu Navidi with Bradley, Dominic, Donathan, Libby, and someone else who likes coffee on that call.
You're so terrible. You know,
that will be an interesting breakdown because Donathan was working Dominic in the last tribe, but Libby was working the Chris and Angela angle, and Dominic doesn't have that same relationship with her that he has with Donathan. He even said this week that he was played by her before. Bradley said this episode that he considered Dominic to be a good ally, and he said that other person whose name escapes me voted with him. So I think that leaves Libby on the outside. So with that in mind, that's my prediction for the final, or what I expect will be the final pre-merge vote. What do you think?
That's interesting. I think that's an interesting call, considering there does seem to be a lot of things going on at the new Navidi. Is that what we're calling it? And that's why I don't think that it's going to be the new Navidi, because they got a lot of attention in the preview, that the one preview I saw, that there was some rift forming between Bradley and Dominic. So here's what I'm going to say, just because I want to be completely right. I think Angela's going to go home.
Wow. So you think that they will turn on Angela and vote out a Navidi after saying Navidi strong all this
way? Yes. Yes. I think they will do that, because this is what Kellen is going to be thinking. If merge is looming, which we all believe that it's looming,
right,
and if you have somebody like Angela, who she has already said, I don't know what's going on in her head, that makes her dangerous. There seems to be a lot of unknowns with Angela. You know, when they have discussions, she gives answers like, I'm not sure. And I think that Kellen is smart enough to realize that going into a merge with someone who is a little bit, you know, waffles a little bit, doesn't really give you a straight answer, that you don't really know where she's coming from, I think she's going to look at Angela and say, I can't utilize her in a merge, but I can utilize Michael in a merge, because Michael has clearly been, he's been playing a game and he's been surviving all of these tribal councils. And I don't know how he's continued to do it, but it has to be his social skills. I mean, he has to be winning people over. And I think that she will look at it and say, you know what, he might be a threat to win at the merge as far as individual immunity, but that's okay, because I'll be in a good spot. You know, if Kellen feels like she's at the top of the pecking order, and Michael will have to come with me. That's my thought, because then I can say, see, you shouldn't have voted out James.
Yeah, I mean, you may be right, especially since the other Navidi on the other tribe had already turned on Angela at one point.
Yes.
So maybe Kellen will figure, you know, even if I'm technically the first, I won't really be the first.
Right. She's, and that's why she's almost like a throwaway vote, where it's like, it's not going to matter that much. So she's one more of, is it nine? Do they have nine Navidi?
I
think it's nine. So, you know, they're still up 8-4.
Yeah.
At that point. So it doesn't even matter. You don't need to keep another Navidi.
8-5.
It is 8-5. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's just one of those situations where I think Kellen will work through that and say, you know what, we don't need her. And Michael will be all over in 2 seconds.
Yeah. I mean, the question I have is, should they get rid of Michael just before the merge as the typical, you know, buff guy merge boot?
Oh, I think that would be a smart move, but Kellen has said it more than once that someone's strength isn't, brute strength isn't necessarily the only thing that matters. She has been very vocal about what else makes somebody a strong individual. Mm-hmm. And I think for her, she will have a concern with what Angela is actually going to be doing. And the likelihood of Angela being unpredictable will scare Kellen.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that makes sense.
That's my guess. And
all right.
And I did ask my magic 8-ball, by the way.
Right.
I know. You didn't think I was going to talk about it. You were like, yes,
I was hoping.
We got away from it. No, the magic 8-ball said it is decidedly so regarding Angela going home.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Now I have to hope that's really wrong. So maybe you'll accept that.
Listen, it's fun. You know you like it.
I know. Nah, sure. Sure, I do.
I'm going to send you. All I'm going to send you a magic eight ball.
Yeah.
I'll get you one. Send it over. Yeah. Amazon can deliver it. Yeah. Look, I'm doing free all advertising. Right. I should probably not say things like that.
Yeah. Well, it's fine as long as they go to the RHAP Amazon page at www.amazon.com/shop/RHAP, where there is, in fact, a magic eight ball that you can buy.
Exactly. See? So everyone should send David Bloomberg a magic eight ball.
Hopefully everyone does not have my home address.
That's true. So, I might have it.
Yes, you might. All right. Well, before we finish up, besides that Amazon ad we just did, I also want to remind everyone about the RHAP Patron Program. Listeners can help support all the RHAP podcasts by heading over to robhasawebsite.com/patron and taking a look at the various Patreon levels to find out what kind of perks you can get. For example, we have previously talked about being able to get into the patron Facebook groups where you can find, you know, a bunch of other people who are also big Survivor and reality TV fans, obviously, not to mention being able to talk with both of us and those other RHAP personalities, you know, who you might want to talk to besides both of us.
Right. It's a good time. You should go. Yeah.
Now, Rob also does special podcasts and videos just for patrons. Patrons get first access to tickets for live shows, and they get discounts for those live shows as well. There are a bunch of other perks too, so check out all the possibilities at robhasawebsite.com/patron. And after you become a patron, you join the Facebook groups, make sure to say hi to us there.
Excellent.
With that, I think it is time for a hashtag.
Mm-hmm.
And since no one can spell beneficiary,
we have to save that one anyway.
Yes, I think the only hashtag we can use is the one that has apparently been making all the decisions lately, which is Naviti Strong.
Aw, I like Squiggle.
I like Squiggle. Now, I am hesitant to see what hashtag Squiggle might be.
You know, that's true. We should check that before we pick them. No, I think Naviti Strong is fine because it will be funny when it falls apart next week.
Aha, mm-hmm. Well, it might be.
See?
Okay.
Yep.
So hashtag Naviti Strong. And of course, we have the hashtag for this podcast overall, which is hashtag YX Lost. Everyone should make sure to subscribe to all of the RHAP Survivor podcasts by going to robhasapodcast.com/survivor. And we are also on the reality TV Rehapups feed. You can also find both of those in iTunes or your favorite podcatcher. You will find in both places the great RHAP content like the Know-It-Alls, the Wiggle Room, the RHAP B&B, and much more. If people want to get a hold of us besides in the patron Facebook group, you can follow Jessica on Twitter at JessicaLewis89, and I am at David Bloomberg. And of course, you should make sure to follow both of us to see the whole conversation throughout the week.
Yes, it's much more fun that way.
Yes. So thanks to Scott St. Pierre, who does the editing on all the Why Blank Lost podcasts. Also, thanks as always to Will from America for the theme song. And thank you, Jessica, for another great episode.
Well, thank you, David Bloomberg. This was quite fun. And I hope everyone enjoys listening over their potential holiday weekend.
Yes. Hopefully we will be able to provide something to do on your Easter travel, probably by the timing your return from Easter travel.
Yes. So enjoy.
So, or your return from Passover Seder travel also.
Yes.
So with that, we will be here again in 1 week. Talk to you then.
Bye-bye.
Jessica will turn it around. They'll break down the rules and they'll show you how. You played yourself and got voted out. This is why blank lost. And this is why blank lost. Oh, baby, this is why blank lost.